I pick up my pace, unadulterated joy trickling through my veins, as I imagine his face when he sees what I've left for him. Something makes a noise from around the corner, and I slow my footsteps, cocking my head to listen for it again. Who would be in the tunnels at this time of night? Few people even know of them. A deep sigh reverberates off the walls, and as soon as I hear it, I relax, grabbing the rolled joint from behind my ear and leaning against the cold stone, bringing the candle to my lips to light it. I blow a cloud of smoke into the air, one foot crossing over the other as I wait, sparks biting at the lining of my gut. Suddenly the footsteps stop, and besides the choppy sound of breathing, silence presses in around me. Very brave for a little doe to sneak into the tunnels at night. She doesn't reply, and the sound of her exhales disappear, like she's trying to keep herself a secret, as if she can hide from me. If you don't come out, I'll assume you wish for me to chase you, and between the two of us, you're at a severe disadvantage. I wait a few more moments before dropping the hash to the ground and stomping it out with the corner of my boot. Very well. Wait! My stomach jumps as she appears from around the corner, a small oil lamp in front of her face, making her look almost ethereal in the dark. I take my time soaking her in, my gaze traveling from the tips of her boots, over her black trousers and dark cloak, up to her hair that's pulled into a bun at the nape of her neck. A slow grin creeps along my face. You look like you're up to absolutely no good. She cocks a brow. One could say the same about you. Whoever said I was good? She fidgets, biting her lower lip. The movement is a straight shot to my groin, aching to feel her flesh between my teeth instead, wondering what it would taste like to have her blood on my tongue. She sighs, running a hand over her face.
You won't tell anyone I was here, will you?
That depends. I move closer. What's in it for me? Her mouth pops open.
What do you want?
I take another step, and then another, until the tips of my boots touch hers. I'm so close I see the muscles in her neck work as she swallows, and my fingers tense against the urge to reach out and feel her pulse, just to see how quickly I can make it beat. Tell me a secret, ma petite menteuse, I whisper. The flame of my candle flashes in her eyes, and she cranes her neck to meet my stare.
I don't have any secrets.
I chuckle. We all have secrets.
So what's one of yours?
Her head tilts. Mine are a burden I wouldn't wish on anyone, even you. She scoffs.
So tell me what you're calling me then.
I lift a brow.
The French,
she presses.
What is it?
Tisking, I shake my head.
Always so many questions. And never any answers,
she bites back.
At least tell me what you're doing here at 3 in the morning.
Now I do lift my hand, unable to stifle the urge, resting my fingers around the side of her throat until I feel the steady rhythm of her heart. She sucks in a breath, and it races under my touch. Maybe I'm following you.
Are you?
Would you like me to? She groans.
Do you answer everything with another question? It's infuriating.
Something warm expands in my chest, and it hits me that here in the tunnels, we're completely alone. I could take her, and fuck her, and break her, and no one would be the wiser. The temptation is so strong, my fingers twitch, my cock jerking wildly as I imagine her naked and flush against the cold stone of the wall, her body shivering as I thrust inside her until she screams. I press my body to hers, wanting her to feel what she's done. Her eyes widen at my movement, her fingers gripping the small lamp tighter. Do you react this way to him? I ask, my stomach churning at the thought.
What?
When my brother touches you. I skim my hand from her neck up to her jaw, coasting across the sharp angles until I'm tracing the lines of her face.
Does your breathing grow shallow, and your skin blush pink?
That's none of your business,
she breathes. I bring my fingertips down the front of her throat in a soft caress, grazing against the pebbled goosebumps of her skin. Does your sweet cunt drip from just the thought of him, the way I know it does for me?
I don't...
She jerks and gasps, her lamp clattering onto the ground and her hand grabbing at my shirt.
Oh!
Glancing down, I realize my candle has dripped, falling onto the skin above her collarbone. My thumb moves to press against the cooling wax, desire shooting through me until my legs threaten to buckle when I notice it tinging her flesh red. I want to pour it on the rest of her and tear it off piece by piece. Her mouth parts, tongue sweeping out across her bottom lip, and damn if I don't wish to lean down and steal her breath for my own. There are a few seconds of silence, tension wringing the air tight as we gaze into each other's eyes, not knowing, or maybe unwilling, to admit there's something more than animosity between us. I bring the candle higher, the flame dancing as I tilt it, my cock leaking when a drop of wax falls to the creamy expanse of her throat and pools in the juncture of her neck, gliding down her exposed skin, creating a path I wish my fingers could follow. Her eyes flutter and she tilts her head, giving me more access. My hand moves to the front of her torso, pushing her as I walk us back into the stone wall.
Tristan,
she murmurs. My stomach flips, an inferno of lust raging through my middle and scorching up my throat. Say it again.
Say what?
She asks. My name, little doe, I rasp. Say my name. She blows out a heavy breath and I suck it in, desperate to taste her on my tongue.
Tristan.
Her fingers tangle in the strands of my hair. I lean my forehead against hers, lust ripping through me until I can't see straight from how badly I want to strip her bare and fuck her raw. I should kill you for making me feel this way.
So kill me then,
she whispers, rising on her tiptoes and tugging on my roots, her nose grazing against mine. Death would be a gift. My hips press into hers. I'd rather see you suffer. Bending down, I breathe in her scent, biting back the groan that begs to escape. My lips graze over the top of the hardened wax on her neck, my body coiling tight with the need to latch on to her skin and mark her for myself, so that even if she isn't mine, she's ruined for anyone else. But I won't allow it. I hate her for making me feel like this, for making me covet yet another thing that my brother gets. She bewitches me, and I would rather rid her from the face of the earth than exist in a world where she tempts me but leaves me with empty arms. Wrenching myself away, I back up to the opposite side of the narrow tunnel, the resentment that's had 26 years to marinate against my brother overflowing until it pours through my veins. So you're a witch, on top of being my brother's whore, I spit. Her features drop, her gaze narrowing into slits. But before she can finish, I spin around and walk away, refusing to acknowledge the way my chest twists when she doesn't choose to follow.
Chapter 21. Sarah B. Going to the tunnels was foolish, but clearly since coming to the castle, I've yet to learn from my mistakes. I thought I would be safe, but I should have known I would meet the prince there. He seems to love lurking in dark and shady corners, and he loves dragging me there with him even more, either to threaten my life or speak filthy words in my ear. I don't know how to tame my reaction to either, and I loathe him. But there are moments, ones where he doesn't seem so terrible. Like when his talented hands draw courage on Simon's arm, or when he keeps my secrets safe. And whether I want to admit it, There's no one else I'd prefer to be caught by when I'm sneaking through the castle halls. There's a level of trust there, one I've never found with anyone outside of my father, and I haven't quite figured out how to correlate the two mismatched emotions. His brother, however, is an easier one to navigate. Thank you for inviting me to lunch today, I say across the small oval table to Michael. I dressed for the occasion, assuming that meant we'd be making a public appearance, but I was brought to his office instead, where he had a light snack of sandwiches and tea for us to eat. He smiles as he wipes a crumb off his mouth with his white cloth napkin.
My pleasure. So, tell me about you, Sarah.
What would you like to know? I tilt my head. I'm not stupid enough to believe that he's curious to get to know me. No man ever is. He shrugs, a sly grin spreading across his face.
Anything you think is of importance?
I return his smile. I'm a simple girl with simple needs. He laughs, a hearty booming sound that echoes off the walls, his handsome face thrown back toward the ceiling. The sound itself is overwhelming in its candor, and I find amusement bubbling in my chest.
I find that very hard to believe, he says.
I lift a shoulder. I'd much rather talk about you.
Don't you read the papers, Sarah?
His brow quirks.
What is there to know of me, other than what the people have already said?
His smile widens as he speaks, but there's a sadness that whips across his features so fast you can barely see it. A pang hits the center of my chest, but I brush it off, reminding myself that I don't care how he suffers. He deserves to suffer for the pain his family has caused. Well, I whisper, we don't get the papers in silver. He laughs.
No, I thought everyone got the papers.
Disbelief coats my insides. Is he really so obtuse? I blow out a heavy breath, gritting my teeth to temper the anger that's simmering at the base of my gut. There's no place to print them. No business that can distribute.
In silver?
His forehead scrunches.
I don't believe it.
Well, I think I would know, I snap. I've lived there my whole life.
I was there once as a boy, and it was a lovely town.
My heart twists at his words. Memories of when I was a young child, and silver was still thriving, floating through my head. Of times when my father was alive, and people were happy and whole. It's incredible, isn't it? I intone, how quickly things can shift. One minute you're on top of the world, and the next... His amber eyes grow dark.
I suppose it is.
He takes a sip of his tea before grinning.
Well then, what do you wish to know about me?
I wish to know that you're dead. Tapping my nails on the table, I lean in. I want to know what will make you a great king. His smile drops, and anxiety plugs in the center of my chest until it feels as though my air has run stale.
Are you insinuating I am not already great, Lady Beatro?
His voice is deeper, a sharp edge lining the tone. I shake my head. I'm simply asking what the people will remember you for. As your wife, it's my duty to highlight those features, to accent them. I must know your plans if I'm to be a suitable complement at your side. His head cocks, his thick fingers rubbing against his jaw. My heart thrums against my ribs, and I lean in closer. What makes you great, King Michael Farsar III? His eyes flare, but before he can continue, a knock sounds on the door, and my cousin, Xander, walks in, a thin smile spreading across his face.
You two look cozy.
Michael breaks our stare and sits back in his chair, his gaze flashing to me one more time before he grins at my cousin.
She is to be my wife, Xander. Did you think we wouldn't enjoy each other's company?
One could never be too sure, sire. Marriages aren't always about compatibility.
Michael stands. walking over to his oversized oak desk and flipping open the container of his cigar case that sits on the edge.
Well, lucky for us, my bride is beautiful and pleasant at conversation. We're more than...
He stops in the middle of his sentence, his face draining of all its blood until it's a ghastly white, his eyes growing as large as cylinders.
Sire?
Xander says, his face pulling tight with tension. What is it? I ask, standing up from my chair, alarm circling through my veins. Are you all right? Michael's jaw tenses, his hand wrapping around something in the box before he drops it and backs away, shaking his head.
Your Majesty?
Xander tries again. Michael's face pinches as he turns to me, his eyes narrowed and panic swirling through their depths.
Did you do this?
The sudden shift in his personality throws me off guard, my defences rising. Do what? I move toward the desk and peer in the case. There are half a dozen cigars, arranged perfectly, and right on top is a black handkerchief with gold lining, the initials M.F. the Second engraved in the corner. Realising they're his father's, I reach out to touch, but Michael flies forward, smacking my hand back.
Don't touch it, stupid woman!
I gasp, bringing my palm to my chest.
Sire, please!
Xander moves up next to me, his brows drawn as he reaches out to touch my arm.
Are you all right?
I nod, my mind racing 1,000 miles a minute as I watch Michael pace back and forth behind the desk, his fingers pulling at the strands of his hair.
Xander, look at this.
He throws his arm toward the open case.
What are we going to do about this? I'm not crazy. I told you I wasn't crazy.
My stomach tightens as I watch the scene unfold. Xander walks forward, peeking into the box, his glasses slipping down the bridge of his nose. His shoulders stiffen the slightest amount, and his head snaps up, staring at me just like Michael did, as if I'm the one who somehow put his father's handkerchief in the case. He sighs, looking over at Michael.
There's an easy explanation for this, I'm sure. Then explain it,
Michael snaps, his fist slamming on the desktop, making the foundation tremble. Xander's eyes flick between us, his voice coming out controlled and slow, as if he's trying to tame the beast before it leaps from its cage and tears us to shreds.
Your Majesty, perhaps it's time we sent Lady Beato back to her quarters before continuing this conversation.
My jaw stiffens. I don't want to leave. I want to know what's happening. I think if there's an issue that's worrying to His Majesty, it's imperative I stay, if only to provide support. Michael takes large, quick steps over, his hand coming up to cup my cheek. His energy is manic. It winds through the air and wraps around me, vibrating until it sinks into my bones. And while his touch is warm, there's no comfort there. No spark. There is, however, a slight tremble.
You are a treasure, he says, his eyes flicking from me to the wall and then back. And I've overreacted. That handkerchief is important to me. I thought I had lost it forever.
His thumb tips up my chin.
Maybe you're my good luck charm.
I force a smile. I hope to be more than that. He grabs my hand then, pulling it to his chest. I let him, and notice how quickly his heart is racing beneath his clothes. If I were a naive girl, I'd think it had to do with me. But I know the truth. Something has spooked him, and it's something to do with his dead father.
Chapter 22. Tristan. When I mentioned the abandoned cabin to Anthony before I snapped his neck, I wasn't lying. I found it one day after escaping from my brother and his pack. I'm not sure who originally owned the place, and I know even less about who inhabited the inside, but I do know in the 10 years since I found it, there hasn't been another living soul that's known of its existence, or been inside the shoddy crumbling walls. Over the years I've cleaned it up. There's no running water, and electricity is too new for it to exist here. But despite all of that, it's comfortable. It's also in such a condensed area of the woods that nobody can hear the screams. I don't want to continue hurting you, I say, walking around Edward. I anchored his arms with thick chains to a long wooden table that's declined enough for his head to be beneath his body. I want to trust you. His breathing is choppy. I can tell from the way the dirty white cloth that's over his face morphs with each of his heavy breaths, being sucked into his mouth and blowing back out. You were foolish, I continue, and as a result, everything could be ruined. Do you know what you've done? He shakes his head, the chains clanking from where his arms pull. I'm sorry, he says, the words muffled behind the fabric. My stomach burns from what he's forcing me to do, and I exhale a breath, clicking my tongue. It's too late for apologies, Edward. We must repent for our mistakes and learn from them. I dip the large metal jug into the bucket of water at my feet, bringing it over his head and tilting until the liquid pours in a steady stream onto his face, soaking the cloth and dribbling into his mouth until it fills his airways. The tendons in his neck bulge as he thrashes against the table. I'm sure you know this is nothing compared to what will happen if your lover gossips and we're arrested for treason, I note. After all, you've been the one doling out the punishment for years now. His breathing garbles, his body rising and falling in jerky movements as he chokes on the water, unable to do anything except experience the sensation of drowning and pray that I let him live. I snap the jug upright again and sigh, my insides curdling at the thought of having to resort to such extremes. The large bottle thumps against the rotting wood floor as I set it down, before leaning over Edward and removing the cloth from his face. His skin is sopping wet, broken blood vessels spinning spiderwebs around his eyes, his lips cracked and bleeding from where he's bit into them in his panic. I adjust the table until he's lying flat. If you were anyone else, I would kill you. His head lolls to the side, his chest heaving. I know, he says, his voice broken and hoarse. Are you going to thank me for my mercy? His eyes find mine, his mouth parted and panting. I don't want to break your spirit, Edward. You must know it pains me as much as it does you. I place my hand on my chest. But bringing someone in without my approval was dangerous at best and a suicide attempt at worst. He blinks his tongue, swiping against the chapped flesh. Thank you. For? My brows rise. For your mercy. I nod, satisfied with his punishment, leaning down to move the water bucket to the edge of the room and extinguishing the candles that light the space. But I don't unbind him. He'll stay the night and I'll fetch him in the morning, after I ensure he understands his loyalty and silence are of the utmost importance. Are you leaving me here? He asks, his tone shaky. Reaching out, I grip the rusty metal doorknob. Think on your actions, Edward, and tomorrow morning we can start again. I swing open the door, stepping outside into the crisp nighttime air. Pausing, I twist back to face him. If something happens, if anything goes awry, it will be you who takes the fall. Do you understand? His eyes are hazy as he stares at me from where he's bound, bobbing his head against the wood. And even though I've lost all my trust in Edward, for now it's enough. Slamming the door shut behind me, I take out the skeleton key and turn it in the lock before spinning to walk away. Tilting my head to the side, I crack my neck, grabbing my matchbox from my pocket, retrieving a rolled joint from inside. Perhaps it was stupid of me to let Edward live, and if it were anyone else, I wouldn't. But Edward is a critical piece in the rebellion. Losing him would be akin to losing an arm, and that's a risk I'm not prepared to take. Lighting the hash, I inhale deep and start the trek back to the castle. The moon is high and bright tonight, the usual clouds that grace the Saxon skies missing, creating a haunting glow on the darkened ground. There's no clear-cut path to the cabin. I've taken different ways over the years to ensure the grass doesn't wear from my footsteps, but the easiest route heads straight to my mother's garden, and tonight that's the one I take. Torture can be so tiresome. I come out of the trees and stop short when I see a shadowy figure sitting at one of the black benches surrounding the fountain. As I make my way closer, I realize that it's Lady Beatro. Something unsettling jolts through me at the fact my little doe is, once again, out when she should be safely away and tucked in bed. Insomnia is a serious health issue, I say, stepping up behind her. She twists around, the moonlight splashing across her high cheekbones, a small smile gracing her lips. You would know. I walk around the bench and sit next to her, splaying my legs out wide as I tip the joint to my lips and inhale again. She watches me, a curious sheen coasting across her face. It's innocent, I'm sure, but her gaze sears through me anyway, blazing a path beneath my skin until she's burned her way to the deepest parts of me. I lean my head against the back of the bench, the wooden slabs pressing against my skull, and reach out, offering her the burning paper. Honestly, I don't expect her to take it, but she surprises me, as she's prone to do, when she grabs it from my fingers with her dainty hands. I roll my head to the side, watching as she brings it to her mouth, wrapping her lips around the end, her cheeks hollowing as she sucks. My cock stiffens. Her eyes grow large, a plume of smoke billowing as she coughs and sputters, her fist coming up to smash at her chest.
That's...
She coughs again.
That's horrid. Why would you do that? It's torturous.
Smirking, I take the hash back, scooting closer to her on the bench. And what do you know of torture, little doe? Her coughing dies down, her eyes glazed from where they've watered.
It burns,
she whines. You just have to learn how to inhale. I move in even closer, my stomach tensing as I bring the joint to her lips, wondering if she'll allow me or if she'll slap my hand away. Both options excite me, and I can't decide which one I crave more, her submission or her fight. Her fingers wrap around my wrist, the touch sending sparks racing up my arm, and I push the edge against her mouth. Suck it slow. My cock hardens until it's painfully swollen and pressing against my leg as her lips wrap around the paper. I reach out, stroking two fingers down the front of her esophagus, because right now, when it's just the two of us, I can't not touch her. Now swallow. I rasp. Her eyes flash, but her muscles bob as the smoke swirls down her throat and bleeds into her lungs. Our eyes catch. Exhale. She listens, and a cloud curls around her face, obscuring her from my view. My insides preen from her obedience. Good girl. My fingers tap her neck before I take the joint away and bring it to my own lips, the end wet from her saliva. Her dark eyes gleam when they lock on mine and then drop. She clears her throat and scoots away on the bench.
I still don't think I like it.
I lean back until I'm staring at the sky, ignoring the way every nerve in my body is sparking like a cannon, urging me to let loose and either fuck her or kill her, just so I can regain the blessed type of numb I'm used to. It's not for everyone, I suppose.
Why do you do it?
Why not? I shrug my shoulders. She doesn't reply, choosing to mirror my body, stretching out her legs and tangling her fingers as they rest on her stomach, her head leaned against the back of the bench. It's silent, the sounds of cicadas in the trees and the occasional hoot of an owl the only thing that accompanies us. It calms me, I finally say. Immediately I want to take the words back, expecting her to jump on the chance to cut me down. But she doesn't. She just hums and closes her eyes. Do you ever feel like you can't turn it off? I continue,
Your thoughts, I mean. Always. When the whispers won't quiet, my body revolts, turning into knots and tangles until I can't sit still. Until my lungs seize up and I can barely breathe through the panic. I lift the burning paper. This helps. Her head turns toward me, her brows rising.
Did the mighty Prince Tristan just admit to me that something can best him?
Anxiety is something that bests everyone it touches, even me. I suck in another hit before offering it to her again. Surprisingly, she takes it, holding it between her fingers.
I get it, she says. Before my father died, I was like any other girl.
She hesitates, glancing at me from her peripheral.
And then, right before my 20th birthday, he went out of town to do what he did best.
Which was?
Being a good man.
Her lower lip trembles.
He promised he'd be home in time, and every day leading up to my birthday, I'd sit at my bay window, staring out at the dirt road, waiting to see him come down the drive. This sick feeling swirling around my gut, making my nerves jump beneath my skin.
She shakes her head.
Turns out I was right, and sometimes when you try to be good, you end up a martyr.
My chest pulls, wondering why she's telling me this, and wondering why I care.
Anyway,
she laughs.
Ever since then, that feeling's never left. It just stews like acid, dissolving everything in its path. I'm always just waiting for the next knock on my door, telling me that a person I love is never coming home.
I swallow around the unexpected emotion her words cause, my mind flashing to the moment I found out my father had died. She brings the joint to her lips, rolling her head back to the sky, her throat bobbing as she inhales. Her silhouette is gorgeous in the moonlight, and before I can stop myself, I'm reaching out to brush a curl from her face, unable to temper the urge. You'd make a stunning portrait. Her nose scrunches, but she doesn't turn my way.
What?
I'd like to draw you, I rephrase, moving in closer, my fingers dancing across her skin. Just like this, with your face kissing the stars. I think it's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. Her body stiffens, and my heart feels as though it's going to explode out of my chest. I'm not sure what loosens my tongue, and I don't know if I even mean the things I say. All I know is that in this moment, it feels like I might die if I don't say them.
Are you calling me beautiful?
She whispers, her eyes wide as she looks my way. My tongue swipes across my lips, and I lean in, my mouth brushing the edge of her ear. I'm saying you could drive a man insane. Make him raise the world just to see you smile. Her body shivers, and my cock leaks, every bone in my body screaming for me to grab her and pull her flush against me. To claim her beneath the constellations she outshines. But then I think of how in a few nights' time, it's my brother's arm she'll be latching onto. It's him that will take her to his bed, and it's him that will have her ruling at his side. Which means I must kill her, just like all the others. So I pull back, dusting my fingers down her hair, and I stand up and walk away, wondering what the hollow ache is in my chest, and why it's choosing now to appear.
Chapter 23. Sarah B. It's been almost a month since I've seen or heard from anyone in Silver. And while I expected it, that doesn't stop the longing from weaving through my chest, wrapping around memories of familiar faces and familiar lands. I've always been a wanderer, but it's different from exploring unfamiliar terrain, not knowing what will happen when you turn a corner. I could traipse through every square mile of Silver with my eyes closed and my hands tied behind my back. Here, though, I still haven't been able to grasp onto anything concrete. The map in my head is blank, with a few dots of knowledge sprinkled throughout. It's an incomplete picture, and every time I try to fill in the pages, something gets in my way. Or rather, someone. My stomach flips when I admit to myself that perhaps that's why I spend my nights sneaking out instead of doing what I should. Or maybe it's the last vestiges of me hanging onto my freedom, knowing that soon I'll be stripped of even that. I'm not naive enough to think that after everything is said and done, I'll be the same girl I am now. Death inevitably changes you. Tomorrow evening, I'll parade around on the king's arm like a jewel he's captured and wishes to keep in his treasure chest.
Tomorrow is important, cousin, Xander says as we walk through the front courtyard.
Nodding, I swallow around the heaviness lining my stomach.
You've been antsy, he continues. I know, like a sitting duck.
I quirk a brow as I glance at him.
Is it that obvious? Other than you having told me? He chuckles. There will be reporters there.
I'm not inept, Alexander. I can handle a few questions. He stops walking, the gravel of loose stones crunching beneath his feet as he turns to face me.
After tomorrow, Sarah, everything will change.
I know that he's right. The engagement ball is the first of many important moments that will plot out my future. I feel its truth deep down inside of me, but for the first time, there's something else there too. It's heavy and it throbs in the center of my chest, making it feel like I'm on a slow march toward death. Closing my eyes, I push down the selfish thoughts, locking them away in a corner of my heart, hoping they'll stay lost forever. I walk again, and Xander follows, scrambling to catch up.
In other news, I have a gift for you.
Do you? I grin at him. And what need do I have for a gift? He smiles back, pushing the glass frames up his nose.
I think you'll enjoy this one.
Do I get to know what it is?
Soon.
Simon races out of a side door at the east end of the courtyard, drawing my attention away as he runs across the grass, his toy sword drawn out in front of him.
Little shit.
I twist towards Xander so fast, my eyes cross.
Excuse me?
He waves his hand towards Simon.
I don't know how many times we have to tell his mother to keep him out of sight and where he belongs.
My stomach sours, twisting until bile burns my throat.
And where does he belong? Out of sight and out of mind.
He scowls.
He's a child, I snap, anger percolating in my gut. He's a scullery maid's child.
My brows rise, and I step away from Xander.
You believe his circumstance makes him less than? Please, cousin, don't be so naive. Everything is about stature in this world. Some belong and some don't.
Because of his skin? My blood boils. His face pinches as he glances at me and then back at the boy.
Because he's an abomination!
I laugh in disbelief. The blades strapped beneath my dress calling me, making me itch to stamp out his ignorance forever.
Oh, Alexander, I think it's you who's the abomination.
Spinning around, I storm away, my insides seething.
How dare he?
Simon stands beneath the large weeping willow in the back corner of the court, his front leg stomping forward as he thrusts out his arm.
En garde!
Warmth spreads through my chest and extends through my limbs as I make my way toward him. And I wonder, not for the first time, how anyone can be so cruel to such an innocent soul. Stopping a few meters away, I watch him sword fighting with the air. My heart squeezes when I remember the bruising of his eye and the tears in his voice. And I wonder if he's by himself because he doesn't have anyone else to play with.
Keep your wrist straight, I call out.
He spins around, his eyes squinting as he zones in on me.
Hey, lady, he beams. What do you know about fighting?
More than you think, I smirk. Come here, let me show you what to do. I wave at him, and he skips over, gracing me with a beautiful toothy grin. I spin him around by his shoulders, placing his hands in front of me and straightening out his form. Then I brush my fingers along the tops of his arms, jostling him just a little. You can't be so tense, Simon. Your body will never obey you if you're stiff like a board. His tiny muscles relax, and I move my hand down to cover his as he grips the base of his sword. Be like water, fluid and quick. Water? He scrunches his nose, and I move his arm, showing him what my father taught me when I was his age. I step away, allowing him to continue the movements on his own. That's right, I say. Water is the most powerful element in the world. Calm when needed and ferocious when tried. Never assume you know something's power because of how it appears. He nods, his eyes wide. How'd you get so smart? I brush off invisible lint from the sleeve of my arm. You'd be surprised what a lady knows, Simon.
That's right. You should never underestimate a woman, especially this one.
Someone booms from behind me. The voice makes my heart dive into my stomach, and I spin around, coming face to face with a broad chest and a sparkling smile. Uncle Rafe! I gasp. What are you doing here? His icy blue eyes gleam as they trail me from head to toe, his weight leaning heavily on a dark wooden cane.
Hello, sweet niece.
And who are you? Simon interrupts, having walked forward to stand in front of me, his sword pointing at Rafe's chest. My uncle glances down, his smile withering away as he takes in who's questioning him. My eyes narrow, the need to protect Simon surging through my blood like a fire. This is my uncle, Raphael Beatro. I place my hands on Simon's shoulder. And this is His Majesty, I say to Rafe, my eyes widening. Simon glances up at me, his amber eyes sparkling. My breath whooshes from me as I look at him, realizing for the first time that his eyes bear a striking resemblance to Michael. My chest caves in on itself. No. Is he? Uncle Rafe laughs.
Surely you jest.
I shake my head. No, he's the king. Don't you know how to greet royalty with respect? Simon's chest puffs out. Yeah, I'm the king. He shoves the tip of his sword into Uncle's leg, and I stifle the laugh that wants to burst from me. Bow before me. Rafe glances between us, and with every second he doesn't play along, my ire grows. Little lion. Two words, and my insides flare to life. My spine stiffens, hating the way my body reacts to the simple sound of his voice. Simon spins on his heels, dropping his sword and tripping over himself to run and greet Tristan. And I can't help it when my heart squeezes, seeing the genuine affection in Simon's gaze. He loves him. And he might be the only one who does. I glance up from Simon, meeting Tristan's eyes. Butterflies explode in the pit of my stomach, and dread follows, wishing that I could force them away. I don't want them.
Is that?
Uncle Rafe's hand reaches out to grip my forearm, but his touch is cold compared to the heat from the prince's gaze. It is. I step away, removing myself from his grasp.
The scarred prince,
he whispers. My chest twists. Don't call him that. I snap, turning to glare at him.
Why is he staring at you like that?
He asks. I blow out a breath and force a smile. Probably wondering why I still exist. He isn't my biggest fan.
Good, he spits. Keep it that way.
He places out his arm, and I slip my hand through the crook, trying to ignore the way Tristan's stare is burning a hole through my back. Chapter 24. Sarah B. Marisol flits around me, making sure my gown flares in the appropriate spots and cinches where it's supposed to. This is the last fitting before I wear it tomorrow night to the ball. And it's stunning. Black lace overlay on cream silk with ruffled fabric that pulls in the waist and a slight train trailing behind. The quartered sleeves are accented by black gloves that rest just over my elbow,
and I've never felt more beautiful. It's what I would choose for myself if I had ever scrounged together the funds for such an ostentatious dress. But until recently, that hasn't been my life. I have plenty of gorgeous gowns, but they're all hand-me-downs from my mother, from a time when we had the type of money to thrive. The ones I came here with have all been provided handily by my cousin, so we don't alert people that, despite being the daughter of a duke, I'm actually quite broke. King Michael wouldn't take kindly to finding out the only regality left is in name. Even more, he'd refuse to believe it's his fault.
"Milady, you look gorgeous,"
Ophelia swoons, her hands resting over her chest as she takes me in.
"Thank you, Ophelia."
I smile at her. Her innocence is something I long for. She's only 3 years younger than me, a fresh-faced 18, but it feels as though we're worlds apart. I suppose that's what happens when you experience the harsh cruelties that this world and the people within it offer. And as I stare at Ophelia, her soft features looking up at me in awe, I send up a quick prayer, hoping she's able to hold on to that innocence for as long as possible. Once it leaves, you can never call it back. It just dangles as a memory you long to reach, but one that's always out of grasp.
"Do you have family here, Ophelia?" I ask.
She smiles, nodding.
"I do. Mama, Papa, and an older brother."
I grin at the love that seeps through her tone.
"And what do they do?"
"Papa works with your cousin on the Privy Council, and Mama spends her time keeping the house."
"Everyone lives here in the castle?"
Her eyes widen.
"Oh, no, milady. My parents live in Saxham, but not here in the castle, and my brother is in France."
Shayna sashays into the room with a tray of tea and stops short as she looks at me.
"Shayna, stop it," I laugh. "You're staring at me like you've never seen a nice dress before."
She shakes her head, the ornate metal tea tray clanking as she places it on a side table.
"You just..."
Her eyes gloss from the hem of the lace up to the risque neckline.
"You look fit to be a queen."
Nerves tighten beneath my skin. I'm very anxious about tomorrow night, and all the nights that will follow, though I'd never admit it. To play in the realm of men, you have to stuff emotions down until you can barely find them. And there's a lot riding on my future here, specifically at the engagement ball itself. Everyone who's anyone will be there, including the entire royal family and the Queen Mother. I blow out a deep breath, trying to collect my racing thoughts and stem the slight tremble in my hands. There's a knock, and Timothy pokes his head in, his brows rising to his hairline, doing a double take when he sees me in my gown. All three ladies turn to face him as he opens the door, stepping to the side to allow for my uncle to move into the room. The ladies twist back toward me, and after they do, Timothy shakes his head, winking as he rests a hand over his heart. Warmth trickles through my chest at his display, and a smile breaks across my face. He may not speak it out loud, but whether he wants to admit it, we're becoming friends.
"Sarah, sweetheart, you look beautiful," Uncle Rafe croons, his fingers tight around his cane as he makes his way across the room.
My gaze leaves the door where Timothy just was, and I focus on Rafe, a comfortable blanket of familiarity coasting over me as I take in his blue eyes and dark hair with thick streaks of white, more prominent than they were a few years back.
"Thank you, Uncle."
He stops when he's in front of me, his gaze moving over the faces of my ladies.
"How much longer will you be? I came here to have tea and catch up."
I glance down at Marisol.
"Boss?"
She scoffs at the nickname, a slight smirk lifting her lips as she stands up.
"We can be done now, milady."
My hands clap together, eager to have alone time with my uncle. He's the most important man in my life, and while I may not trust his son, Rafe, I trust implicitly.
It is time.
Rafe's voice is serious, his fingernails creating a steady tapping rhythm against the top of his cane. My stomach churns as though a thousand bees have swarmed and stung my insides, and I swallow around the swelling. I nod. I know. His brow rises.
Have you gained the ear of the king?
I lift a shoulder, my teeth scraping the inside of my cheek until it bleeds. As much as I can, but he's not always around. I glance down at my fingers, where they tangle together on my lap. And your son is not as helpful as I had expected. Uncle Rafe's bushy brows draw in, his lips twisting.
That boy is always doing something.
He leans forward.
But you can trust him. Change is on the horizon, sweet niece. But that doesn't mean it's easy.
I don't speak the questions that are heavy on the tip of my tongue, like asking him to explain what on earth he means. I've learned long ago that Uncle Rafe's riddles and nonsensical statements are best left as they are. He hums.
You've always been the smartest child in our family.
I'm not a child anymore, Uncle. He chuckles.
To me, little Sarah B, you'll always be a child.
Smiling at him, I pick up my tea, letting the hot water scald my tongue as I sip from the cup, wondering how smart he'd think I was if he knew I spent my time dreaming of dark corners and dangerous princes. Uncle Rafe's grin drops, his eyes sparking as he leans forward.
Your father would be very proud of you, and every single person with Farsar blood running through their veins deserves to pay for what they've done.
I nod. A heavy ball of sorrow surges into my throat until I can hardly breathe around the ache, and the weight of responsibility bears down on me in a way I haven't felt since before arriving in Saxham. I let myself get distracted. It won't happen again.
Chapter 25. Tristan. Most of you already know that tomorrow evening is the engagement ball for my brother and his bride. Boos ring out from the sneering faces inside the tavern, and someone spits on the ground in obvious disgust. I bring up my hand, picking at a fingernail as I sigh. They will most likely not expect me to show, but we all know how much I enjoy doing the unexpected. Laughs trickle through the room. We're on the cusp of a new dawn, one where you aren't limited based on circumstance, where you aren't thrown to the lions because you're a little different. I pause, my gaze meeting the eyes in the crowd, feeling the blaze burn through them as surely as if it was licking against my skin. The king has gone mad, although he wishes for no one to know. My lips pull back from my teeth. But I know. Why can't we just storm the castle now? A young woman in the front screeches, her stringy hair falling in her sunken face. We have the numbers. Rumbles spread through the crowd. I raise a hand in the air, silencing them. I understand the plight, but instant gratification rarely satisfies the need, and my desire, with your help, is to ensure freedom for us all. Ending Michael's reign is not enough. But if he dies, the crown belongs to you. She presses, her fist smacking her other hand. Where it belongs. That's true, and it will look extraordinary upon my head. I smile. But our end goal is much greater than just me. I reach down, lifting up the hem of my tunic until it exposes my chest, showcasing the fresh tattoo, still tender from where the ink pushed into my skin. It's of a hyena, teeth bared and spit dropping from its mouth, perched on top of bones, and flames reflected in its dark eyes. Together we rule, divided we fall, is scrawled underneath. I know most of you despise the name hyena, and who could blame you? Filthy, they say, disgusting, uncouth. The faces in the crowd grow dark, scowls marring their features, and heavy energy wafts through the room from their tangible anger.
But power only lies in the hands of those who we let have it, I continue, dropping my shirt and walking back and forth across the raised platform. It's time for us to take our power back. I meet the stare of the woman with her idiotic questions, shocks of pleasure surging through my veins when I see the admiration in her eyes. She shoots to her feet before dropping to both knees, bowing before me, just the way I like it. They call us feral animals. I stop pacing, a grin creeping along my face. We'll give them so much worse. Mugs slam on tables, a steady cheer growing like a tidal wave. For now, feast on the provisions I've brought. Go home with full bellies and kiss your families goodnight, knowing you've chosen to be on the right side of history. Plates of food are carried from the back area of the tavern and placed on the tables, people scrambling to grab their share. I step off the platform, weaving my way through the benches until I reach the back corner, where Edward stands, his jaw set and his eyes wild, most likely still recovering from the psychological ramifications of the punishment he received. His new woman leans against his front, his arms wrapped around her waist. You've done well, Shayna, bringing food from the castle, I say when I reach them. She inclines her head.
Thank you, sire.
Did Paul give you any issues?
Not at all.
She smiles, her eyes leaving mine and scanning over the tables of everyone surrounding us, no doubt taking in the rail-thin frames of people shoveling bread and beans into their mouths.
They eat like it's their first meal in days, she says.
I place my hands in my pockets, my thumb brushing against the rough edge of my matchbox. For most of them it is.
What you're doing here?
Her eyes grow glassy as she meets my stare.
You're very different from what they say.
Edward's arms stiffen around her waist. It's subtle, but I catch the movement, filing it away for later. I smirk down at the girl, unable to decide if she's too naive or stupid, or maybe she's already forgotten that I threatened to let the town rape her while I killed everyone she loved. Either way, her words strike a chord, one that sits in the center of my gut, its reverberation vibrating through every part of me until the echoes make me ill. I lean in. I am everything they say, and many things they don't. Her fingers tighten where they're wrapped around Edward's arms.
If Sarah knew what you were doing, she would help, she whispers.
Do not speak her name to me, I snap, my chest pulling tight.
I just...
Shh! Stepping forward, I press my hand against her mouth, smashing her lips until they mold around my fingers. Do you remember what I told you? About what would happen if you were to betray me? Her eyes shutter. And she nods.
Good.
I smile,